every single day, an estimated 150 to 200 species go extinct. However, despite this staggering number, the majority of people are still both largely unaware and unaffected by this statistic. Most could see that another animal has gone extinct halfway around the world, but they think that it doesn't affect them in any way. They think there are still so many species on this planet left. One extinction has to be so insignificant and won't have any large or lasting impacts on the function of our ecosystems. This, of course, is completely wrong, and changing this attitude is of growing importance. Each individual species has interconnected relationships within its ecosystem. One extinction can send vibrations around the world that are important and are significant, but that we just might not feel. Eventually, all of those vibrations will end up shaking humanity. And that's what we're going to talk about today: how diversity of life affects our society. My name is Nathan, and this is At Risk. To start, I'm going to explain what biodiversity is. The term biodiversity means the variety of life on our planet. This means that more biodiversity doesn't necessarily indicate more life, but really just the number of types of life. For example, let's say that within an ecosystem, the only life is 100 rabbits. While that's a ton of rabbits, there is absolutely no biodiversity within that ecosystem. On the other hand, if you had an ecosystem with one individual from 200 different species, it would be exponentially more biodiverse, even if it wouldn't last that long. In an ecosystem, biodiversity is important to keep it working, functioning, and prospering. And when an ecosystem prospers, it makes stuff like oxygen, lumber, or medicinal plants and animals, so on and so forth, which us humans are able to consume or sell or buy. It's really just a simple line to break down. More biodiversity means healthier ecosystems, and healthier ecosystems means we get to have more stuff. So this also means that with a decrease of biodiversity, all the things along that chain that I just mentioned are affected. Basically, end point, less biodiversity means humans get less stuff. But how does this happen? How can we go from a prospering environment to one with no life left? The answer is simple. It's humans. With our pollution, greenhouse gas emissions, and ability to introduce invasive species into new environments, we are killing many different species as a byproduct, and often don't even notice that we've decimated entire populations of wildlife until it's too late. The classic and repetitive story seen on a smaller and easier to handle scale is the story of the tropical island. Because islands are isolated and surrounded by water, they tend to have a wider range of habitats. And because of this, they have some of the most heavily concentrated areas of biodiversity on the planet. And while this is good, this is a great thing. This also means that introduction of pollution or foreign species can totally throw off the balance of pre-established food webs and networks that could have lasted for thousands of years. One example of this is with the mongoose crisis happening currently in the state of Hawaii. Just around 150 years ago, sugarcane farmers from Hawaii discovered that farmers from the Caribbean had had a lot of success controlling their rat population by introducing the mongoose into their fields. A mongoose, for those who don't know, is a carnivorous like weasel, mammal. And the farmers got together, they discussed it, and after some debate, it was decided that they would, in fact, introduce the animal into multiple plantations to see if this was a good way of controlling their pests, despite warnings from a couple people who thought that maybe they should look more into what the consequences of introducing an invasive species might be. Of course, the people with the skepticism were correct. Because mongoose are diurnal, they're only awake during the day, and the pests that they were supposed to be hunting for were nocturnal, only awake at night, the two species never came in contact with one another. And because of this, the mongoose were given free rein over a completely new land, and before you knew it, the invasive species began destroying valuable endemic flora and fauna found nowhere else in the world. Today, Hawaii is still struggling with this problem, despite multiple efforts to try and stop the spread of this chaotic little animal. As a side note, I'm not trying to antagonize this animal in any way. It was introduced into a new environment with tons of opportunity, and the mongoose was really just technically following its genetic code. Instead, I'm really using this as an example to show you how human-controlled factors play a big part in destroying our own valuable biodiversity, intended or not. Biodiversity isn't completely defenseless. It has a saving grace, a mysterious protector that protects every single species. At the sacrifice of a couple individuals, this protector gives a species a chance to survive. And this guardian angel is genetic diversity, or the diversity of genes. A gene is what gives an organism a trait. In a population, if there is a larger variety of traits, there is a better chance that that species, that population, will survive through hardship. Humans, for example, are super genetically diverse because there are a lot of us and there are a lot of traits. And because we are so genetically diverse, it is easier for us to maintain our survival. For example, let's say that there is another pandemic with a super deadly virus that arises in the future. But because there is more genetic diversity in our species, there is a greater chance that there will be individuals with an evolved trait to combat it in some way. This genetic diversity stops species from being completely wiped out due to one natural or human-caused disaster. This also tends to be why endangered animals stay endangered, and why it's so difficult to bring species on the brink of extinction away from extinction. Inbreeding between individuals of a species because of low population further limits genetic diversity because there are just simply less genes to go around. This means low population species are especially vulnerable to external causes, which can be both natural or anthropogenic. It's not only species that have a cool protector. ecosystems have a pretty cool protector too. I mentioned at the beginning of the episode that 150 species go extinct every day. But that number's so large, why don't we notice it more? If 6 types of plants and animals completely disappear from the face of the earth every hour, how on earth are our ecosystems still operating? Well, turns out nature has this clever little tool that it uses to disguise its suffering. This tool keeps ecosystems functioning even with the loss of an important species, such as a pollinator or certain microorganisms that start the food chain. That tool is species redundancy. Multiple species falling into the same purpose for an ecosystem. And this redundancy can be seen all around the world. Beetles, bacteria, and fungi all decompose dead organic material. Bees, moths, and other insects can all pollinate the same plant. And this means that even if one keystone species goes extinct, the ecosystem can continue to chug along. And while this is great because it keeps ecosystems running for longer, it also has one pretty big downside. Because ecosystems keep running at around the same pace, once an important species has died out, it can prevent us from noticing that the ecosystem is suffering at all. If that keystone species isn't replaced, eventually we're going to run out of redundancy. Because of this, ecosystem collapse can be sudden and unexpected. And this is why changes in our society are unnoticeable when one of these keystone species goes extinct. Anyways, what am I trying to say throughout this whole long, dragged out explanation? Well, what I'm trying to say is that life is important, no matter how small, and every ant on the sidewalk, bird in the tree, or wildflower growing in your backyard may have its own unique, invaluable position in their ecosystem, producing materials, chemicals, and medicine that we humans use on a daily basis. But by way of invasive species, pollution, and more, we are slowly lowering the genetic diversity and ecological redundancy of the world. We are our main offenders. Before we know it, there might not be any nature left. Our children and grandchildren of today might be the last generation to enjoy the bountiful and beautiful sights our planet has to offer. It doesn't have to be like that, though. Constantly, nonprofit charities and organizations are fighting to reverse the damage that we've already caused. The Greenpeace Fund, the Rainforest Alliance, and the World Wildlife Funds are 3 really good examples where you can donate and start saving our world before it's too late. I've included links to their donation pages in the episode description if you're interested in donating. All of these organizations try to spread awareness of the state of our environment, fund protection work around endangered animals and plants, and fight to stop deforestation. Any money donated can have some massive impacts on our ecosystems. Even though this year's Christmas is already here or maybe already passed, when someone asks you what you want for a holiday in the future, might as well ask for a donation, saving our planet just a little bit at a time. Thanks for listening. Sorry, I haven't posted an episode in like such a long time. I've just been kind of busy with school and haven't found the time or really the motivation to make an episode. I can't believe it's been pretty much a year since I made my first one of these. I can't promise any episodes in the near future, but if I find the time and the motivation, I will definitely post. As always, if you enjoyed the episode, share it with everybody that you know, because it always means a lot when more people listen to this podcast. Anyways, until you hear my voice again, see ya.